Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Oh, hi, Mitchie.
Yellow.
And welcome back, Lena.
Thank
hey,
you.
Going?
Thank you, guys.
We had so much to talk about last time. We couldn't just fit it all in one podcast, one session. So we're going to go again and just like dive a little bit deeper. And
are we singing again?
No,
do you want to sing again?
No,
what do you want to sing?
No, no, I'm gonna go for like a Latino song.
Go.
You know who Mary loves is what's his name?
Ricky Martin.
Oh,
Ricky Dickie. Yeah. If you know a Ricky Martin song.
Of course. No, I don't.
Oh, that's okay.
Living la vida loca.
You do. You're holding out us. Out on us.
Later.
So listen, I think. What we spoke about last time was so cool because it was really a little bit about obviously your story, but then we were talking about, you know, where we came from, life on earth, and, you know, but we really wanted to, I think it's important that you've got some stuff to back that up, right? There's some information to help back up what we were talking about before we dive deeper into some other info.
And Lena, like, you're a microbiologist. You work for one of the large universities here in Western Australia as a microbiologist. And we got into a little bit about, and I think it's important to understand that we're in here to talk, to not just say, hey, there's these theories, go on, check them out. We want to actually give people some of the evidence of what we're finding at the moment. So this really is, you know, it's the cutting edge and of what we're discovering at the moment. And one of the things I said at Christmas time in STP was, I came in and I said, hey, look, Lena, they found evidence of alien life. And you were like,
Hang on
a minute, Mitch. And I said, no, they have.
Hang on, I'm going to put my science hat on and I'm going to go, what are you saying? I'm going to prove this.
And I'm like, no, it looks like. And then you came back to me and said, hey, you know what? It's actually related to panspermia as well. And what you're saying is correct.
I didn't know that part.
That's why we were so fucking excited about it. I'm like, this is, man, people need to hear this stuff.
You guys are like, oh my God, da-da-da-da-da. And sometimes I miss some of what you're saying about it. Okay, so talk. Tell me, how is it related?
But we go into the octopus story a little bit, which is like, so then the scientists, they proposed that, so basically the octopus is one of the most intelligent animals, and all of the extraordinary features that they have, like their eyes, their capacity to camouflage, change with their environment, all of this is actually very rare. And
very rare
and hard to see in all the organisms. So they wanted to go back a little bit in the part of the evolution behind the octopus and how did that happen or where that possibly came from.
Right.
So basically what they're suggesting is that, so they went and looked into the primitive, what we would probably call the parent of what the octopus, the current octopus is. And then again, they went into the genomes. They're starting to look into the genomic information from them. And
because the genomes leave history.
They leave history and they leave clues.
And they tell a story.
Yeah, and they tell a story. So, and basically, one of the interesting thing is, for example, is the octopus has about 33,000 more genes than the human genome. So we have about 25,000 genes that code for the proteins, so that are the ones kind of in charge of the coding or the blueprint for our proteins. Mm-hmm. And the octopus has about 33,000 more.
So 58,000.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so is that, so we have, apart from the octopus, we have the most amount of.
Oh, there is other species.
That has more than us?
Yeah.
Okay.
There is more. And then what they also were looking into the genome was like there is certain bits of the sequencing. So it was the sequence or what I told you guys about, the little puzzle pieces in it. And then they look into these puzzle pieces and they have these, there is changes in this puzzle. So when they compare it to their ancestor, and they compare it, so the ancestor, the old one, compare it to what we currently have, and it was very, very noticeable that these changes were not in the ancestor. So again, we go back into what happened in between. Mm-hmm. And then these little sequences that were changed are involved in many of the characteristics that these organisms have. So what they're suggesting in this article is that they start talking about viruses as introducing genetic information into planet Earth as a possibility.
Right.
That what they're doing is bringing, like, it's kind of putting parts of their information into the information or the gene of, in this case, the octopus. So it's kind of like is the transfer of new data mm-hmm. into their genome, mm-hmm. which possibly was involved into their rapid and their very extraordinary evolution.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Can I just debrief so I can understand? Yeah. So basically you're saying... Ah, oh shit. Okay, basically you're saying that the information and the sequencing, like you were saying about the human and how you can't quite understand the gap, the jump, the same thing has happened for the octopus. Yeah.
So there's a jump in evolution over a time period. Yeah. When they looked back in history at the grandparent, there was a jump that didn't include evolution.
Well, it is still... had evolution, but so they still in the current form of the octopus, there's still genetic information from the ancestor.
Right.
But there is a lot of modifications in it that in a small period of time or in small period of the evolution of the animal,
right,
kind of can't get explained.
Doesn't quite make sense.
So then it's when they put in the hypothesis of that viruses as forms of transferring information.
So the viruses transfer the information as a way of introducing this type of information to the planet.
And into their species. And accelerating the evolution. So by making it quick.
So where are the viruses coming from?
Well, Mitchie.
I love the way she does that. She's like, you're going to get me into trouble here, Mitchie. Okay.
Let's go.
It could be, if we already proved that the microorganisms are in the comets, because we have evidence, there is actual evidence that there is that they have been life inside these comets. Mm-hmm. Now, there is also evidence, for example, of organisms that have been in the surface of other meteorites outside, so not once they've been inside, the outside. For example, in the surface of the International Space Station, there was also articles showing that they took samples from the windows of the International Space Station, and they were able to get DNA and bacteria out of...
So what that says is, just so everybody knows, that the universe is theming with life.
Yeah.
And it's full of microorganisms and bacteria.
Yeah.
And that means that there is life outside of this planet.
Yeah.
Okay. And in some way, that life is making it through the atmosphere.
And it has made it through.
And it has made it through the atmosphere.
So, and that could be part of the... So they bring in genetic information that... would help the life in here evolve.
Right. So what do you mean by that? They're bringing in genetic information. The viruses, the microorganisms are bringing in. Okay. Right. So is that when you're saying alien life, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You're talking about... The so you're not talking about Marvin the Martian, which is really disappointing for me.
Well, not yet.
We haven't got there. I was with one of my clients last night, and I said something, and I'm gonna get burnt on the hill for this anyway. I was with one of my clients and I said to one of my clients, "I'm telling you, within our lifetime, we will watch another species of humanoid stand next to a world leader."
Okay, so is it going to look like Marvin the Martian?
I don't know. But I said, that is going to happen. And I said, remember, I'm the one that said it to you. And he goes, Mitch, I'm going to credit that to you. I'm telling you, that's going to happen within a lifetime.
But, okay, so let's leave that aside just for the moment. Sure. I'm not saying that we dismiss that entirely. No. I'm just saying, but to begin with, when we talk about alien life, we are talking about microorganisms at this point,
so far,
right?
Because so that's far. Why we have been able to prove.
Because we've only been able to prove that. But it's a bit based on what we've said, and I think – I don't know if anybody would question this. I don't know anyone who would, but maybe there are people. But I feel like it is a bit ludicrous to think that with so much space out there that there isn't any other form of life out there. What that looks like, it's probably not going to show up as Marvin the Martian, unfortunately, but what it looks like is we don't know.
Yeah.
But to think that that's like not possible at all in any form. So the first way to even conceptualize that is through the microorganisms.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is just the actual astronomical data. So there is data from, you know, the out of space that has detected outside of our solar system that there is about 100 billion other planets able to sustain life.
Meaning,
it has a sun source within the Milky Way.
It has a sun source, it has a moon source, it has the same sort of solar system that is required to be able to actually sustain life.
It has the small components to be able to sustain life, which the main thing is water.
And that, again, maybe not people, but me, when I was growing up and people would speak about stuff like that, you envision that life on other planets means other humans. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily mean that.
But it just means
that there is the environment that's able to sustain life in any of its forms.
So we can't deny it anymore.
And if there's 100 billion of them,
That's what they can estimate.
In the Milky Way.
That's what they can estimate.
Right.
But the other thing is that, you know, it's to think that it's not a humanoid type form.
I'm not saying that either.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the way I see microorganisms and bacteria is like, that is, you know, it's like, that is a flower being pollinated. You know, it's like the universe.
That's how information
is transferred.
The planet is
a flower. You know, the planet is a flower and it's been pollinated.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the universe.
Yeah, it's a good way to think about it.
Spray. You know, that is the seed of life.
But also, like, if we look into our microorganisms here on Earth, and if we take in account that if the microscopic universe or the microscopic life is the small part of the more evolved life like we are, we see in these microorganisms that they transfer information within them.
Mm.
So you got a cell here, a bacteria here, that is able to transport or transfer information to another bacteria next to it to make it capable to survive.
Wow.
For example, that's the case of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So the bacteria that, for example, in health, in medicine, affect humans, and there is a huge problem in hospitals because they are able to resist the antibiotics they've been treated with. But the thing is, they're able to transfer that information into. So if this cell has it, then I transfer to the next cell near me, so that one is going to be able to survive.
Wow.
So that. It is a possibility. While we were talking about the viruses, they can transfer information in the goal of life surviving and continuing.
Mm-hmm. So, but the word antibiotica. So, biotica is life.
Yeah.
Anti-life. So, but antibiotics are actually anti-life.
Yeah.
Right. So their job is to kill certain things,
certain organisms.
Yeah. But bacteria can come in and actually help that organism or fight against the antibiotic, right?
Exactly, 100%. And that's what we see as well in our crops. Like we see fungi that if an individual within a population has some genetic information or some DNA that gives them the characteristic or the capability to survive what we are applying to them to trying to kill them, this organism is able to transfer to the next one so that they survive too.
Wow.
That's insane. So let's talk a little bit about viruses then for a second, right? If we have a virus and we talk about herd immunity. Is this the same thing of what we're talking about?
What do you mean by
herd immunity? So a virus comes into a society.
Yeah.
The best way to handle that is to get immune to it by allowing the herd to pull together around the virus, because like a mushroom will, like a fungi will, it will adapt to the virus at any one time. Is that the same thing as what you're talking about?
Well, there is transfer of information, mm-hmm. in terms of the, especially, well, the way we studied it a lot is the for them helping others be capable of surviving.
Right.
At the end of the day, all the virus wants is to survive and reproduce and be more of it.
Right.
But during that process, there is interchange of there is interaction with the cells, and there is very few viruses that actually want to destroy the cells. They are parasitic.
Parasite.
So they just
right.
a parasite. They don't want to kill the host. All they want is to survive and be able to reproduce. And just continue in the life.
Right, right.
I think how herd immunity in terms of a virus, what we talk about, like, works, well, the idea is how I understand it is that, you know, if one person has you get the virus and your body fights off the virus, mm-hmm. then and the more people in the community that have done that, mm-hmm. that means the virus can't penetrate the community, the more people that
can't reproduce. Yeah. Because basically the person or the people already have everything to fight it. So it doesn't even have a chance to put this information out and trying to reproduce.
So I'm going to ask you a question that I haven't asked you before, so I don't know if you know the answer to this, okay? So we talk in STP about the moment of equilibration.
Yeah.
And in that moment of equilibration, how the love and wisdom and the new knowledge that you get is actually ingested into the cell,
yeah,
because when you're under pressure, when the cell is under pressure, right, it has to reform in order to be able to handle new information and new levels of information. So when we're going through that equilibration process, which you spoke about in the last podcast, where you had this moment of, oh my God, right, and you realized that the thing that you were looking for out there was actually in here, right. We talk about how the cell wall breaks down and the cell takes on that new information. And then what happens is that new information goes and gets and infects all the other cells like a virus would.
Yeah.
Are you able to talk a little bit about that? Just a way to explain it?
Yeah. Well, I just believe because all it is, if we talk about our environment and our perception of the environment is what defines what genes are we going to be, or the cells, what genes are going to be using and all of that. By the fact of having a new perception, then new genes are going to be activated.
Right.
So I feel that after we have equilibration, it's like the environment changes. So the influence of that environment in our cells is going to be different.
Right. So this comes back to epigenetics then. So the question there, I suppose, I'm going to get back to it, is, but it's not the environment that's changing, but it is the environment
perception.
It's the perception that's changing.
It all goes back to the perception of the environment.
So let's go to it like an example, right? I've got a perception that I was abandoned or I was neglected, right? And so as a result of that perception, my environment is going to show me that I was abandoned and I was neglected. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So now if I shift my perception and I realize that what happened back there was neither right nor wrong, but there was just love in that situation, then my perception has shifted.
And that perception influences the cells, the way the cells influence what is going to be turned on and off in our genes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So then all of the biology of the cells
shifts. Right. And therefore, the environment doesn't appear to them, it doesn't appear in the same way, or environment shifts?
The perception of the environment. So then the cell has adapts to it.
Right.
So instead of activating this set of genes or activating this set of information, it has transformed into, no, we don't need that anymore. We've got something else.
Right.
Or so, the perception is different. So then the activation within the cell is completely different.
So
that if the cell change, if one cell's change, is going to start changing the ones around them.
The neighbors change.
Then their environment, for example, would be an organ change, then the whole entire.
So therefore, anybody who's saying that the environment is causing the issue for themselves personally, they have to the feedback is to actually shift the perception of the environment. And that's what that actually makes a difference on a cellular level.
Yeah.
And people, like I notice people when they've finished relationships and you or done some work on themselves, they actually look different.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they look different is because at a cellular level, something has shifted. And what you're saying is that the different sets of genes are switched on as a result of the new perception. Right, so, and that's infected cells.
So they've had a breakthrough, whether it's relationships and you or flip the script, once they've had that shift, the information travels through the cells, and then what happens is that the environment is the same at the point in time, right, of the breakthrough, right? But once the behavior is different, then the way in which the expression of the self happens in the environment will now adapt to the environment.
Exactly.
So environments adapt to transforming humans. But where people get caught is they want the environment to adapt change. Before they will change.
Very important. Yeah. So this is like, to me, as much as all of that other stuff is so cool, the fact that this comes down at a human level to the fact that we actually have a say, you know. And I know that's what, you know, I've listened to Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden and all those guys talking about it. But this, we actually have a say in how we show up in our space, as a result.
I think that really boils back to the statement of the seer, the seeing, the seen are the same. You know, it is all you. You know, it's you, and that's what full responsibility is. You have, right down to a cellular level, we can now prove if things are to change in your life, it has to change on the inside first. It is futile to try to change it on the outside. Because no matter what you do, the great Dean Martini statement, nothing of your senses will ever satisfy your soul.
Yeah.
At an energetic level, nothing of your senses will ever give you what it is you're looking for. It can't, because cellularly, it can't.
Well, you can't perceive it.
Yeah.
That's just, and it's the perception, and more than the perception is the reaction, is how it's going to be the response. I think that's what it changes, the response to the environment.
I get it.
We know when we lose, we watch life, somebody die, we know then, like if we have a look at, you know, Brazil, Peru, any of these rainforests now, we're finding major civilizations and cities underneath these rainforests. And so I've heard the concept that the first thing that takes over is actually mold is the first thing that comes in, and then all of life springs out of that. And so you then, that is the first level of destruction in terms of the cells and what happens first. Can you talk into that in any way?
Well, it's basically what we just talked about. That first point of life is that little cell, is the one cell, and is then the community that will grow out of it.
Right.
I can't really, I don't have the information. For example, in those Asian civilizations where what happened to them, is something.
I think the message I'm hearing, though, is that regardless of whether it's a cellular level or as a whatever level we're talking about, that the information is communicated in the same way. You know, I know Paul Bailey, when he talks about, in his book, Think of an Elephant, right? Yeah. He talks about how the structure and the human being is just even the internal workings of a human being, how it all comes together as one. You know, that you need everything working together, the cells work together, right? And then as as individuals, we're a part of a bigger organism. And then when you go lower into the microscopic level, it's all a part of everything's the same. It's just at a different level.
Yeah.
And we forget, I suppose, that the cells have
that intelligence
yeah. in that way. Have you got any, like, tell us something really cool in terms of the mushrooms, in terms of, like, have you got a story that you can share or an analogy you can share in terms of the mushrooms that are going to help anybody listening maybe to understand what we've been talking about up to now?
Or something maybe quirky that you've watched them do.
Yeah. Like to express their intelligence,
well,
for example.
Well, actually, yeah, there is a study that it was very interesting. I think it was Chinese scientists, what they did. Oh, no, Japanese. What they did is very interesting. So what they first started it, they put this Petri dish, which is like a little plate that has food on it. And then they put the fungi in it. And then the food was on the other side. So they have the medium where they can grow so that they can kind of sustain. Mm-hmm. But then the actual food, what they would like to eat, was on the other side of the plate. So then the fungi made its way through. Mm-hmm. So they started with that. So then let's scale it up. So then what they did, they put the fungi in like a puzzle. So then they will put food sources in complete different...
Like a maze.
Yeah. And they put it into different places within the maze, mm-hmm. and the fungi will go and find its way through. So then what they did, which was very interesting, is that they make like a big Petri dish that simulates or is similar to the transport system in Japan. So mm-hmm. the avenues and the streets and all of that. And if it simulated it. And then they put the fungi in it. And the fungi was able to rearrange itself, mm-hmm. so then it like changed and trying to find the food, mm-hmm. but it make it in the most efficient possible way mm-hmm. to get mm-hmm. be able to get to the food. And then they look that back, and if they were to follow mm-hmm. that same way the fungi did it, which was the most efficient way, it would also transform the way the transport
system
over there. Wow. That we're making way more efficient.
More efficient. Because even with the maze, they would find the quickest way to get to the food source, didn't they?
Yes, the quickest
rather
and
than
the most efficient
way to
do
get
it.
To the food source.
Which it will be exactly the same, that it will actually be the most efficient way to like reorganize
the transport system in Tokyo by the way they set out the nodes. Yeah.
So here's the question I put it to you then, and I have my own concept of what the answer is, but what do you think intelligence is?
I think, how do I say what intelligence is? I think it's just ingrained knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Just is,
but I think my question is: is it ingrained, or is it?
I think it's within the cell.
Yeah, but my question is: what is it though? What you know? And I like the concept of that. It's energy in formation.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely!
It's coming in a formation and affecting the cell in a certain way. But intelligence is just it's energy. It's light energy that we pick up.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Cool. So any other info you'd like to share with us before we finish up, Lena?
No, I think...
We've talked about a lot.
Yeah,
it's cool.
We talk about a lot of the quirky science, and I think, maybe in the future we can, maybe get off some of the people with the panspermia mm-hmm. theory, and actually mm-hmm. they can go even deeper into the bits of science, which mm-hmm. I think is fascinating. Well, in my mm-hmm. case, I find it fascinating, which is very, very intellectual, but it's just the way they find ways to prove what the concepts are.
Well, it's awesome that's happening. You know, there's such a huge push now, and there's so many sightings, it's really, really, there seems to be some sort of level of disclosure happening.
It's changing
at a very, very rapid rate. And I think that's really, really cool. I think perhaps this whole concept of deliberate, manipulation.
It could be like we're just limited by what we can prove.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it's not happening or that it could happen.
Mm.
Cool.
Awesome. Thanks so much, thank Lena. We love you. We'll have you back, I'm sure.
Thank you. People
will have lots of questions to ask you.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB Seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.